Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
Brian Lehrer on WNYC, and we begin today with the truth about the Ryan Plan. The truth that there is not one Ryan Plan for Medicare, taxes, and spending cuts, but four. We think this has been a major source of confusion for many Americans trying to figure out how to assess Mitt Romney's new running mate, so we will try to clear it up. So joining us now is Mark Goldwein, Senior Policy Director at the Committee for a Responsible Federal Budget. That's a nonpartisan think tank that leans toward being deficit hawks. Thanks very much for doing this, Mark. Welcome to WNYC.
Thanks so much for having me.
So as your group describes it on your website, in 2008, Paul Ryan put forward his Roadmap for America's Future, which I would say is probably the most radical of the four documents. Then in 2010, it was the Roadmap 2.0. In 2011, it was the Path to Prosperity. And again in 2012, a new version of the Path to Prosperity. Let's begin in 2008. Ryan was not yet the Budget Committee Chairman. George Bush was still president. But Ryan published this kind of grandiosely named Roadmap for America's Future. What was in it?
That's right. This Ryan's original roadmap was sort of meant to be a conservative vision of what the budget should look like and how we should reform the budget. It focused mainly on three areas, maybe four. Medicare reform, specifically on moving towards a premium support system, something like what he's proposing now, but with cost controls that were meant to kind of put pressure without overburdening beneficiaries. So there was the Medicare reform. There was a comprehensive Social Security reform, which included increases in the retirement ages, changes to the benefit formula, and perhaps most significantly, an option to enter private accounts as opposed to or as an alternative to the Social Security system. The other major component was tax reform. Under the original roadmap, basically all of the special provisions in the tax code, all of the deductions, credits, et cetera, would be eliminated and replaced with a very simple two-rate tax code of 10% and 25%. Again, not that different, but a lot more specific than what he's recommending now. And on the corporate side, he would have replaced the entire corporate tax with essentially what some people call a VAT, essentially a consumption retail, receipt retail consumption tax.
Let's take a few of these at least one at a time, and let's focus on Medicare first, since this seems to be the hottest button in the campaign. What was in Ryan's roadmap in 2008? I know you just described it basically, but how did it change over time for the 2010, 2011, and 2012 version of Ryan's vision?
Well, it's interesting because it has gone back and forth a little as Congressman Ryan has tried to sort of redefine his own views and for the Path to Prosperity win over the Republican caucus. The original version, along with every version until the current, effectively replaced Medicare for new beneficiaries with private competition, with privately competing plans and a fixed subsidy, whereas the latest plan maintains traditional Medicare and allows traditional Medicare to compete with those private plans. So that's difference number one. Difference number two, and this is more important for budget hawks like me, is the growth rate has changed a lot over time. So, for example, in his first roadmap, he said Medicare costs should grow, the premium support should grow halfway between general medical cost growth and inflation growth. And the idea there was, we know health costs are still going to grow faster than the economy, but if we put it at the halfway point, we're at least going to put downward pressure. In 2011, he had costs growing at inflation, which would have been a substantial reduction in costs relative to our current path. And then in his latest, he's kind of bumped back up to growing at 0.5% faster than the economy, which is actually much more similar to his original 2008 growth rate.
The idea being that since healthcare costs for many years have been growing faster than inflation as a whole, if they limit the amount of federal spending on Medicare, then that will force healthcare costs to come down. That's in theory. Or it will just force seniors to pay more out of pocket to meet that inflation.
That's what will happen in practice. I think the idea is you don't want a growth rate that's not going to save you any money. So you don't want to just grow the premium support at what you were growing Medicare at before, because then what's the point? But you also don't want a growth rate that is so unrealistic that it's shifting all the burden onto seniors. What you want is a growth rate that is going to put some downward competitive pressure on the overall system, but still be realistic and achievable.
What about taxes and tax deductions in the Ryan plan? Again, you talked about the 2008 vision and the original roadmap to America's future. Did I hear correctly that you said that he would abolish every single tax deduction and replace it with a simpler system that you pay a certain percentage no matter what you're spending on mortgage interest or charitable deductions you make or any of that?
So not every single one, but close to it. Again, this is an interesting case where his plan has jumped around over time. The original plan was very specific. It named the deductions and credits that it would get rid of. It said exactly what the tax code would look like, and it said exactly what it was going to do in the corporate side. Then move forward to 2011, the tax was very vague. It just gave an overall revenue number and a top rate. Now looking at 2012, Congressman Ryan is back to being specific on the sweeteners, reducing the rates to 25 and 10, but less specific on the pain, on which deductions and credits will have to be eliminated.
And on that lack of specificity, one thing that seems controversial is whether Ryan's tax vision is revenue neutral. In other words, does it raise as much revenue as the current system, but in different ways? Or even in the face of the deficits that we have, does it try to starve government, which he thinks should be small, by shrinking the tax base?
Right. And both Congressman Ryan and separately Mitt Romney have said that they want to pursue revenue neutral tax reform, where they find enough deductions, credits, preferences, et cetera, to pay for the rate reduction. And as a policy matter, that is possible. But there's certainly a concern that these guys are very specific on the cuts, on the tax cuts they want to make, and very unspecific on how they want to pay for it.
And the Democrats charge that if they really are going to be revenue neutral and they're really cutting the top tax rate, which, of course, takes the most money out of the federal coffers from wealthier people, then there's going to have to be, in effect, a tax hike on the middle class in order to make up that total amount of revenue if they're going to keep it equal to the current projections. Has your think tank crunched those numbers?
Well, I would disagree with the idea that it's impossible. I also worked in the Simpson-Bowles Fiscal Commission, and we actually showed a plan that would get the top rate down to 28%. Raise $1 trillion more than we're currently raising over 10 years, and be incredibly progressive, ask the wealthiest for the most. The major difference between our plan and the Fiscal Commission and where I think Governor Romney and Paul Ryan are going is we tax capital gains as ordinary income at the 28%. And all the tax expenditures, by the way, almost all of them are regressive. They go primarily to the wealthiest folks. That includes the mortgage interest, the state and local deduction, the health care exclusion. But the one that goes the most to the very rich is the benefit, the preferential treatment of capital gains and dividends. Mm-hmm. So if you aren't willing to make changes to capital gains and dividends, it's very difficult to ensure that the wealthiest Americans are still contributing the same share.
My guest on WNYC is Mark Goldwine, Senior Policy Director at the Committee for a Responsible Federal Budget, a nonpartisan think tank that leans toward being deficit hawks. He's explaining to us the evolution of the Paul Ryan plans. One of the reasons people are so confused about what Ryan really is proposing for Medicare, for example, and for taxes and some of the other things that the federal government does, is that there have been four Ryan plans since 2008, and people can choose to attack the Ryan plan of their choice or defend the Ryan plan of their choice in partisan terms, and that's what's been happening a lot in the media. So we're trying to explain to you what are the Ryan plans and which is the most current. And if you have any questions on this, 212-433-WNYC, 212-433-9692. What about the deficit itself, Mark? One of the critiques by Democrats is that while talking like a deficit hawk, some of these Ryan budgets actually don't reach a surplus or a zero deficit for 30 years.
Well, you know, I think that's actually a little bit of an unfair criticism. The situation is so bad that even deficit hawk groups like me aren't talking about balancing the budget. What we're talking about is stabilizing and reducing the debt relative to the economy. And you can do that and still have 1%, 2% deficits. Now, all that said, if Congressman Ryan's plan or others were willing to go further after defense, were willing to talk more about revenue, he could get to a balanced budget faster. But I don't think that the mark of a deficit hawk is whether you can reach balanced budget, because it's just so difficult given our current situation.
It's whether the deficit could be something that is considered manageable. And you said 1 or 2%. What is the current deficit in percentage terms? If we're running like $1 trillion a year of a deficit now, what is that in percentage terms? In percentage of what?
So this is percent of the economy. So what percent of what we produce every year, called gross domestic product, are we spending on the deficit? This year, it's about 8%. 8% of our total national income is the deficit. Once the economy fully recovers, but we also see cost growth of Medicare, Medicaid, and Social Security, it's probably going to be more like 4 or 5% and rising, which is still far too high.
Is there any significance to the name change? You know, Ryan called his document the Roadmap to America's Future in 2008 and again in 2010, but changed it to the more modest sounding, the Path to Prosperity for 2011 and 2012. Was that a political decision to change the wording, or they just needed a fresh title, you know, freshen it up for so the press would pay attention to it as something new? Or do you have any idea?
Yeah, it's a great question. Part of what's going on here is the two things that are called the Roadmap for America's Future are actually different than the two Path to Prosperities, and they're different in this way. The roadmap, both roadmaps, were meant to be Paul Ryan's personal vision for what to do over the long term. The Path to Prosperity is actually Paul Ryan, as chairman of the Budget Committee, his budget resolution, something that he's required to propose every year and receive the votes of all of the not all of, but most Republicans in Congress, enough to pass it through the House. So the Path to Prosperity is actually, even though it talks about the long term, it's focused more on the 5- and 10-year window and is owned more broadly by the Republicans, whereas the Roadmap for America's Future is focused more on the long term and is owned more specifically by Paul Ryan.
David in Forest Hills, you're on WNYC. Hello, David.
Yeah, hi. Maybe I'm just being selfish, but it seems to me that for people like myself who are married dual earners, Obama's plan has a massive marriage penalty, $250,000. He cuts off when you're married, $200,000 for singles. Is Ryan's plan or anybody's plan, do they care about eliminating this horrible marriage penalty if we want people to get divorced or never get married? These guys are great.
Thank you, David. Do you know, does the Ryan plan address that at all? What he talks about in the Obama plan, for people who don't get it, is Obama would want the Bush tax cuts to be restored for to, that is, the old pre-Bush tax rates to be restored for people making over $200,000 a year if they're single, $250,000 if they're married, which is a marriage penalty because that second earner only gets to earn $50,000 before it kicks in. Has Romney, Ryan addressed this?
Well, the short answer is that Ryan's current budget is nonspecific about where those 25 and 10% brackets would start, so he hasn't told us. I think this brings up a larger problem of arbitrary cutoff points like $200,000 and $250,000. It doesn't really make sense to be thinking about tax policy that way. It makes sense to be thinking about what the tax code should look like and what overall distributional and economic goals we want to achieve and how to achieve them.
Cal in Milburn, you're on WNYC. Hi, Cal.
Hi. Ryan supported the invasion of Iraq, et cetera. Our presence in the Middle East has cost us trillions of dollars and continues to cost us. Instead of just talking only about Medicare, why not talk about pulling out of the Middle East and saving not only trillions of dollars in budget money, but we'll save a lot of American lives?
Right. So to put this in pure budgetary terms, I think we could even expand Cal's question, Mark, to include military spending overall, which is about 20%. That's huge. 20% of the federal budget is military spending. Correct me if you have a different number. But I think that Ryan's plan does not reduce military spending at all in any of the four versions. Is that correct?
That's basically correct. He put some controls on military spending, and he also rightly, as President Obama did, believed that we should be budgeting for the wars in Iraq and Afghanistan, as opposed to what the Bush administration was doing, which was sort of lowballing the number and then coming back and asking for more money. There's no question that defense has to be part of this solution. Our biggest national security threat, Admiral Mike Mullen, former chairman of the Joint Chiefs of Staff, says, is the national debt. so that we're not willing to cut defense spending in order to fix the national debt is unfortunate and a little bit crazy if you'd ask me. But at the end of the day, the defense spending, as expensive as it is, isn't really growing. So it's not the problem of our growth in deficits. That really is the entitlement programs, Social Security, Medicare, Medicaid. So we should be looking at defense. We should be looking at wasteful spending throughout the government. But at the end of the day, Chairman Ryan is right about at least one thing. We need to get Social Security, Medicare, and Medicaid under control if we want to solve this problem over the long run.
Morgan in Middle Island. You're on WNYC. Hi, Morgan.
Yeah, when they talk about the people 55, they're okay for 10 years. When they get to 10 years, they're 65. It's $12,500 out of pocket, where the average Medicare person receives an income of $23,000 a year. They're going to really be hit hard. In addition, the donut holes opened up again on Ryan. The preventive care is eliminated. What about pre-existing conditions? I don't think that in the Ryan plan. A lot of failures here. A lot of smoke and mirrors by Ryan.
Morgan, thank you. Do you want to address any of those, Mark?
Sure. I think it's a very learned caller that knows about the donut hole. What Congressman Ryan in his most recent budget has called to do on the recent health care bill, the one that some people call Obamacare, is to repeal basically all of the coverage provisions, all of the Medicaid expansion, all of these new exchanges and subsidies, the closing the donut holes, but actually to keep most of the Medicare cuts, which creates for an interesting dynamic. And we've seen in the press the last couple of days is a disagreement between Congressman Ryan and Governor Romney, who wants to repeal the Medicare cuts as well as the coverage provisions.
And with respect to the age, Morgan mentioned age 55, and what happens at 65. The Ryan plan, in at least one version, and tell me if this is true in all the versions, does not kick in with respect to Medicare for people who are 55 or older today. So
55 or younger.
It only applies to people who are 55 or younger once they reach Medicare age.
That's right.
And yet, it seems politically some of the biggest negative reactions to it is coming from seniors around the country. And so do you think that this fact is just simply not breaking through? Or do you think there's reason not to believe that it would only apply to people 55 and younger?
It's a complicated question. I think that Congressman Ryan and Governor Romney are trying to protect themselves politically by exempting people age 55 or over. I actually don't think that's the right approach. I think for something like, a radical change to Medicare, that might make sense. But we have a deficit problem now. There's no reason we can't be making changes to provider payments, reforms to cost sharing, things like that, starting sooner.
So that should give seniors reason to be uncomfortable, it sounds like to me. If a kind of centrist deficit hawk like you, who does not take all the Republican positions on taxes and military spending and some of the other big things, says you can't hold Medicare recipients harmless because the budget deficit is just too big, you have to apply it to people who are older today, then people would have reason to be nervous that once the Romney and Ryan team were to get into office, if they do, that people like you would have their ear.
Well, I think that would be true either way. I don't think we should change the deal on people that are in or near retirement. But there's a lot we could do to make Medicare more efficient, which doesn't have to wait to the 55 and below crowd. There's a lot we can do to ask drug companies to pay more. We can change on the fiscal commission, something we recommended was changing the cost-sharing rules so people paid more first dollar but had more protection for catastrophic coverage. We can do that. And I think both parties, whoever wins this election, is going to have to look at that because the Medicare program is a very large portion of the budget, and we can't afford to ignore it for 10 or 15 years before getting any budgetary savings.
We've only got a minute or two, but what about Medicaid, the health insurance plan for the poor? What does Ryan do to that, and has that changed over time?
So that has changed. In his most recent two budgets, Congressman Ryan has changed Medicaid into a block grant program, where instead of the federal government giving states a match for every dollar they spend, the federal government just gives states a fixed amount and then indexes that amount to inflation or inflation population, or the index has changed. Before, health reform, Congressman Ryan actually had a plan, had a coverage expansion plan, where he was going to take the current tax benefit for health care, get rid of it, and replace it with a tax credit. And that tax credit would be available for people currently on Medicaid, as well as people higher up the income ladder.
And so when Democrats say that there would inevitably be more of a burden on people who are poor, you know, with respect to Medicaid, or that the states just wouldn't include as many people on Medicaid as they do now, if the federal share was to go down and it were to revert to a block grant, is there an argument against that?
Well, I think it depends how you do the block grant. Again, this is the case where if you do the block grant at a reasonable level, it can force states to be more efficient in the delivery of care and to encourage patients to be more efficient. But money can only come from one of three places. It can come from efficiency, it can come from the states paying more, which means higher taxes or lower services, or it can come from the Medicaid beneficiaries. And if you're growing it, if you're forcing Medicaid to grow a lot more slowly than it's used to, probably it's going to come from all three.
So in your opinion, last question, should a moderate swing voter conclude that Ryan is moderating over time as he matures and issues blueprint after blueprint, roadmap after roadmap, or takes more Americans' needs into account, or that he's going to conduct as much Ayn Rand, destroy the safety net, because he doesn't believe in it, political warfare as he can, and being vice president will give him a bigger path to accomplishing that than being in the House?
You know, in some areas, Congressman Ryan's plan has moderated over time. For example, his last two plans don't include anything on Social Security, and his most recent plan keeps traditional Medicare. In other areas, he's talking about new things that were never in his original roadmap. For example, block granting food stamps. A lot of this is a factor of how big our debt has gotten and making the numbers work. So I'm not sure looking at these four plans you can really conclude what a Ryan vice presidency would look like, most importantly because the man at the top of the ticket is ultimately the one that matters, and folks should be focusing on Governor Romney's plan.
Mark Goldwein, Senior Policy Director at the Committee for a Responsible Federal Budget, a nonpartisan think tank that leans toward being deficit hawks. Thank you very much for joining us.
Thanks for having me.
Brian Lehrer on WNYC. Coming up next, a rock band and its free speech literally on trial in Russia. Stay with us.